je m'en restais debout, même si de mon corps on fait le coup. Pour toujours, je resterai parmi vous. Je reviendrai.
Chapter A for Hansa. Awkward grammar appalls the craftsman. Adada Bard is daft as Zara. Dams stagnant art and scrawls an alpha. Slapdash arc in a backward zag that mars all stanzas and jams all ballads. What a scandal. A madcap vandal crafts a small black ink, a hand stamp that can stamp a wax pad and at last plant a mark that sparks an ars magna, an abstract art that charts a phrasal anagram. A pagan skull chants a dark saga, Mahabharata, as a papal cabal blackballs all annals and tracts, all dramas and psalms, Kant and Kafka, Marx and Marat. A law as harsh as a fatwa bans all paragraphs that lack an A as a standard hallmark. Hassan Abd al-Hassad, an Aga Khan, basks at an ashram, a Taj Mahal that has grand parks and grass lawns, all as vast as parklands at Alhambra and Valhalla. Hassan can, at a handclap, call a vassal at hand and ask that all staff plan a bacchanal, a gala ball that has what pagan charm small galas lack. Hassan claps and ta-da. An Arab lass at a swank spa can draw a man's bath and wash a man's back, as Arab lads fawn and hang athwart an altar, amaranth garlands as fragrant as attar, a balm that calms all angst. A dwarf can flap a palm branch that fans a fat maharaja. A naphtha lamp can cast a calm warmth.
So long, dusty quaint old song, things attached with glue, live and die and gone.
Good evening. You're listening to Audio Text. I'm Julie Peters, and it's Wednesday evening at 6 o'clock. And at the beginning of the show today, I was reading for you one of Christian Book's poems from his work entitled Eunoia. It's all about vowels, and I'll get back to that in a little while. I don't have any listings for you today. I am on hiatus at the moment. I am learning how to be a yoga teacher at the moment. So I've got some shows pre-recorded for you. I didn't want you to go the whole month of June without poetry. It would be a very sad thing if you had to do that. So I'm going to play some recordings for you today, and I'm going to be reading some more of Eunoia, and hopefully you'll enjoy that very much, as I always do. As I said, I don't have any listings, but I do recommend, if you want to check out what's going on around the city in terms of literature, do go to thestraight.com. They have a great arts listings event. So they have a whole literary section. It's really helpful. And also you can go to vancouverpoetryhouse.ca, which is the website that that's the organization that does the Vancouver Poetry Slam. And they usually have events that are going on both related to that and other things going on in the community as well. So do feel free to check that out. Coming up right away, I'm going to play a piece by Natalie Gray. She's one of the youth poets at the Vancouver Poetry Slam. She's under 21, and I always really enjoy her pieces. They're always a little weird and very entertaining. So this piece I'll call Sunglasses.
Fuck you, sunglasses. She looks so incomplete, sucking strip malls through swirly straws, and yes, if you ask her, it's just as depressing as... Fuck you, sunglasses. She looks so incomplete, sucking strip malls through swirly straws, and yes, if you ask her, it's just as depressing as it sounds. Staring down those wearing down her protective coat gets tiresome. She nurses her stress, struggling with all that she could be, and she'll ask you what better means because all she knows is it will be one day. Her unshakable faith in better rattles the foundation of every stone stranger she meets, rattles her well-maintained body parts. She'll tell you your tits are Buddha's belly, and she is fresh out of luck. be surprised when she skips off before dawn. She's got better things to do than care about you, like figuring out this better theory. Good thing there are no clouds today. She's gonna scintillate. Thank you. She nurses her stress, struggling with all that she could be, and she'll ask you what better means because all she knows is it will be one day. Her unshakable faith in better rattles the foundation of every stone stranger she meets, rattles her well-maintained body parts. She'll tell you your tits are Buddha's belly, and she is fresh out of luck. Surprised when she skips off before dawn. She's got better things to do than care about you, like figuring out this better theory. Good thing there are no clouds today. She's gonna scintillate. Thank you.
Beautiful country. You know, I rode out here about 50 years ago on a little dun horse and started a film career. Picture called The Big Trail. Well, I made quite a few since then. Some good, some bad. Matter of fact, in those days,
CITR!
Matter of fact, they come in pretty handy anytime. It's kind of nice to know you have something set aside. So if you ever figure on that, remember that
CITR
can be mighty helpful.
Yeah!
Hey, Quentin and Dave from Chips with Everything.
Hey, Heather from Queer FM, what's up?
Well, you know how Bryce, our program director here at CITR, has kind of been riding all of our asses about making promos for our shows?
Cha! Yes!
Well, you know, I was thinking, like, over at the CBC, they have this woman named Promo Girl, and she comes on once an hour and tells everybody what's coming up, and it's usually kind of theatrical, and she has, like, a really sexy voice and stuff. So anyway, I was thinking that I'd really like to have a promo boy, or like, promo boys. Would you guys be up for that?
Sure. What do we have to do?
Just tell people about Queer FM, really.
Okay.
Queer FM features news, views, current affairs, arts and music for, of course, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities and all its allies. Heather Kitchen hosts Queer FM Sundays from 6 to 8 p.m. on CITR 101.9.
Next up, a piece by Kevon Cameron or Scruffma.
When I get mad, I put a pen to a pad. Kid is something that you never had. Writing, saying, dancing, playing, graffiti, emceeing, breaking, DJing, the four elements, the tetragrammaton, the quadrangular base upon which our pyramid of culture is founded upon. And yet they say hip-hop is poisonous, as if my black heart beats venomous blood down through my veins and up through my arteries, circulating a system of toxicity. Fortunately, that is not what keeps me warm. And I should know, because I am hip-hop. They say hip-hop is poisonous, and we eat it up, as though we never tasted sweet truth from the mouth of a ghetto youth trying to comprehend his surroundings before they devour him. Tastes may range from bittersweet to sour, but every vocalization carries word, sound, power. Fight the power, black steel in the hour of chaos. They say hip-hop is poisonous, as if that's the order of the day. They say censor my lyrics and you unwittingly obey. They say hip-hop hates women. Don't believe the hype. Hip-hop is the guardian of the goddess archetype. Beautiful black mother, queen of the universe, I am your royal beef eater every time I taste a verse. And should an insidious MC infect your royalty, I will quote the antidote in a dose of poetry. Writing, saying, dancing, playing. Creative ciphers of spiritual incantations. Free-flowing verses of imagination. B-boys and B-girls bring the noise, battling peaceful silence. They say violence in hip-hop is poisonous, yet the society from which it was birthed over-aggressively pursues wars that destroy us. Hip-hop is a disillusioned soldier, returning home from a war he tries to understand. He is called a hero because of the gun he holds in his hand and the ferocious freedom fought for in a foreign land. He is called a snake because of the gun he holds in his hand and the venomous spitfire rained down on a foreign land. He is called a gangster rapper because of the gun he holds in his left hand and the microphone he wields in the other. Always do the right thing, brother. If you can walk, you can dance. If you can talk, you can sing. Do that which is instinctive, though it may be counterintuitive to the way they choose to live. Hip-hop cannot be overstood by underdeveloped caveman brains. While the sun scorched our skins, they drowned in the freezing rains. And when we brought fire to their glacial ice caves, they bought fire and sold us as slaves. They would attach to hip-hop monetary worth, and in the same hypocritical breath, accuse us of poisoning the earth. They are frustrated that their concrete jungles cannot eliminate the drumbeat. For when the drumbeat plays, all the slaves run away. And when all the slaves have fled, the plantations are left for dead. And when the institutions lay in ruins, they will say hip-hop was our undoing. Writing, saying, dancing, playing. And they can never tell me who I am, and I know I am. I am modern manifestation of ancient man, continually compelled by vibrant rhythms, calling and responding, breaking and bonding. My words are binding and bound. Hip-hop is foundation, and my foundation is sound. And if hip-hop is poisonous, I will spit my lyrics in your face, and we will see if it burns.
Next in this brilliantly random show that we're having today, a piece by Fernando about Nelson the Headless Baby.
Okay, this is a poem about a headless baby. It's called Nelson the Headless Baby. He came out looking like a half-baked munchkin. A puzzle of a miracle with a missing piece. Everything else seemed normal. He had all 21 digits. He was perfect in every way, but he didn't have a head. On his shoulders was a stump with one eye. The doctors went back up the womb like they were looking for a missing sock in the dryer. There was no sock and there was no head. The doctors scratched theirs. He was named Nelson. Nelson, the headless baby. From the start, Nelson had an inner peace. Nelson was tough. He was born without a head, but you didn't hear him crying about it. There was no real scientific explanation. Perhaps it was a headless sperm or a headless egg, whatever. They didn't go any further after discovering that, like most men, Nelson's brain was in his penis. Nelson had big hands and big feet, so it was safe to assume that he would turn out to be quite intelligent. They let the miracle be. They took him home, a happy, headless masterpiece, still loved despite looking like a small version of the Statue of David, in which Michelangelo had somehow lost interest in finishing. During walks in the park, old ladies with small dogs would come to his stroller and pinch his stump. Thinking it would improve the quality of his life, doctors fitted him with a prosthetic head, but Nelson resisted, believing there was nothing wrong with him. The gods gave him a mountain to climb instead of a noggin, but just like the armless man who learned how to play the guitar with his feet and peel grapes with his toes, Nelson got by. He was small but quick, so he excelled in sports. Being headless had its advantages. He never had to wear a geeky bicycle helmet. He was good at wrestling for the obvious reason that he could never be put in a headlock. He always had the best Halloween costume. He never owned a comb. He never had to duck. But as a child, he would never be able to ride the roller coaster. Despite that, all the other boys on his block wanted to be just like Nelson. Nelson got all the girls because he had that headless boy next door look. for a guy who didn't have one, he wound up getting a lot ahead in his teenage years. Soon the neighborhood was overrun with all these poor imitations of a miracle. Stupid headless kids running around bumping into fire hydrants. The other parents believed Nelson was becoming a bad influence. So whenever he was out and about, Nelson had to wear a t-shirt that said, "Do not try this at home." Nelson would go on to lead a happy yet unspectacular life. He wrote a little poetry. His favorite pastime was going to open mics and creeping out teenage girls with his poems about masturbating goldfish. That would be enough. He would never appear on Oprah promoting a book about the struggles of being headless, because there was no struggle. He was headless, but he wasn't special. Tom Cruise would not be playing him in a movie about his life, and he was totally cool with that. He wound up marrying a woman he met at a reading who, despite liking his poems about masturbating goldfish, had a good head on her shoulders. She bore him three other miracles, two boys and one girl, all headless, named Sid, Rex, and Gwyneth. Sid would become a podiatrist. Gwyneth would end up running a muffin shop that only sold damn muffin bottoms. And Rex would wind up taking after his father, becoming a door-to-door shampoo salesman.
So now we've got a little time at the end of this show, and that's because I wanted to be reading a fair bit of Christian Book's Eunoia. It's a really interesting book. You might have heard of it before. It was a bit of a novelty when it came out. Basically, each chapter is written using only one of each vowel. And I think that you actually can't fully appreciate this work until you hear it read out loud or read it out loud yourself, because you're surprised to find that that each vowel actually, incredibly, really does have a personality. It's really interesting. And I think it tells us a lot about the English language itself. I guess you can start to think about why certain words have all those U's in them or whatever it might be. So I'll just explain a little bit about the book itself. I'll just read you the little blurb on the back. It explains where the word eunoia comes from. It means beautiful thinking. It's the shortest English word to contain all five vowels. This book also contains them all, except that each one appears by itself in its own chapter. A unique personality for each vowel soon emerges. And this is what the back blurb says. A is courtly. E is elegiac. I is lyrical. O is jocular. U is obscene. Now, I agree with some of these, but you'll have to listen and tell me what you think, and if you think that those are really the words that you would use for each of the letters. Apparently, it's 7 years in the making. It's an uncanny work of avant-garde literature, promising to be one of the most important books of the decade, which seems like kind of a cursed thing to put on the back of a book, but indeed it has been quite popular and a lot of people have heard of it. And so this lovely, crazy Canadian writer, Christian Book, decided to do this. So I read a little bit from chapter A at the beginning of the show, and so I'm going to continue a little bit with that, and then we'll move on to the other vowels. So, continuing with chapter A. Hassan asks that an apt draftsman map what a ranchland can farm, all grasslands and pampas, all marshlands and swamps, flatlands and savannas, standard badlands that spawn chaparral and crabgrass. Hassan asks that all farmhands at farms plant flax and award Hassan, as a tax, half what straw a landsman can stash at a barn. A ranchman at a ranch warns campagnards that a shah has a spat at a hard and fast laws that ban castadral graft. Hassan can tax a Saharan caravan that carts packs and sacks past bazaars at Aswan and Rabat, Basra, and Dakar. Stalls at all marts hawk baccarat glass. Stands at all malls hawk Macassar brass. A haggard almsman can drag a handcart and hawk glass jars, racks and racks. Agar, agar, damar, lac, and balsam sap. Half a franc, a flask. From Chapter E for René Crevel. Unfettered, these sentences repress free speech. The text deletes selected letters. We see the revered exegete reject metered verse. The sestet, the terset, even les scènes élevées en grec. He rebels. He sets new precedents. He lets cleverness exceed decent levels. He eschews the esteemed genres, the expected themes, even les belles lettres en vers. He prefers the perverse French aesthetes. Verne, Perret, Genet, Perec, hence he pens fervent screeds, then enters the street where he sells these letterpress newsletters 3 cents per sheet. He engenders perfect newness wherever we need fresh terms. Relentless, the rebel peddles these theses, even when vexed peers deem the new precepts mere dreck. The plebes resent newer verse. Nevertheless, the rebel perseveres, never deterred, never dejected, heedless, even when hecklers heckle the vehement speeches. We feel perplexed whenever we see these excerpted sentences. We sneer when we detect the clever scheme, the emergent repetend, the letter E. We jeer, we jest, we express resentment, we detest these depthless pretenses, these pretense tense verbs expressed pell-mell. We prefer genteel speech, where sense redeems senselessness. Westerners revere the Greek legends. Versemen retell the represented events, the resplendent scenes where, hellbent, the Greek freemen seek revenge whenever Helen, the new-wed empress, weeps. Restless, she deserts her fleece bed where, detested, her wedded regent sleeps. Whenever Helen feels these stresses, she trembles. She frets. Her helplessness vexes her. She feels depressed, even when her cleverest beekeepers fetch her the freshest sweets. She feels neglected, even when her shrewdest gem seekers fetch her the greenest jewels. She regrets her wretchedness, her dejectedness. Nevertheless, she keeps her deepest regrets secret. She never lets herself express her echt Welschmerz. She never vents spleen. She never feels tense whenever she keeps her vehemence repressed. Hence, she seeks lewd revelment, les fêtes ses rêves, where revelers lend her cheer. From Chapter I, for Dick Higgins. Writing is inhibiting. Sighing, I sit scribbling in ink this pigeon's script. I sing with nihilistic witticism, disciplining signs with trifling gimmicks, impish hijinks which highlight stick sigils. Isn't it glib? Isn't it chic? I fit childish insights within rigid limits, writing shtick which might instill priggish misgivings in critics blind with hindsight. I dismiss nitpicking criticism which flirts with philistinism. I bitch, I kibitz, griping whilst criticizing dimwits, sniping whilst indicting nitwits, dismissing simplistic thinking in which philippic wit is still illicit. Pilgrims, digging in shifts, dig till midnight in mining pits, chipping flint with pricks, drilling schist with drills, striking it rich, mining zinc. Irish firms, hiring mix whilst firing Brits, bring in smith with mining skills, kilnwrights, grilling brick in brick kilns, millwrights, grinding grist in grist mills, Irish tinsmiths, fiddling with widgets, fix this rig, driving its drills which spin whirring drill bits. I pitch in, fixing things, I rig this wrench with its wiring, I fit this drill with its piping. I dig this ditch, filling bins with dirt, piling it high, sifting it till I find bright prisms twinkling with glitz. All right, from Chapter O for Yoko Ono. Loops on bold fonts now form lots of words for books. Books form cocoons of comfort, tombs to hold bookworms. Profs from Oxford show frosh who do postdocs how to gloss works of Wordsworth. Dons who work for proctors or provosts do not fob off school to work on crosswords, nor do dons go off to dorm rooms to loll on cots. Dons go crosstown to look for bookshops known to stock lots of top-notch goods, cookbooks, workbooks, room on room of how-to books for jocks, how to jog, how to box, books on pro sports, golf or polo, old colophons on school books from schoolworms. Sport two sorts of logo, oblong walls, rococo scrolls, both on worn Morocco. Monks who vow to do God's work go forth from donjons of monkhood to show flocks lost to God how God's word brooks no crooks who plot to do no wrong. Folks who go to Sodom kowtow to Moloch, so God drops H-bombs of horror onto poor townsfolk, most of whom mock Mormon proofs of godhood. Folks who do not follow God's norms word for word woo God's scorn, for God frowns on fools who do not conform to orthodox protocol. Whoso honors no cross of dolors nor crown of thorns doth go on, forsooth, to sow worlds of sorrow. Lo, no song of Solomon comforts Job or Lot, both of whom know for whom gongs of doom doth toll. O mondo doloroso. And finally, from Chapter U, for Zuyu. Kultur spurns Ubu, thus Ubu pulstans. Ubu shans sculptor, Uruk uns plus busts, Zulu jugs plus tasks. Ubu sculpts junk for kunst und gluck, Ubu busks. Ubu drums drums, plus Ubu strums crafts, such hubbubs, such ruckus, thump, thump, thrum, thrum. Ubu puns puns, Ubu blurts untruth, much bunkum plus bull, much humbug plus bunk. But trustful schmucks trust such untruth. Stuff. Thus Ubu, cult guru, must bluff dumbstruck numbskulls, such chumps. Ubu mulks surplus funds, trust funds plus slush funds. Ubu usurps much, usufruct. Ubu sums up lump sums, Ubu grumps dumb luck. Duluth, dump trucks lurch, pull U-turns. Such trucks dump much undug turf. Clunk, clunk, thud. Scum plus crud plugs up ducks. Thus Ubu must flush such sulcus ruts. Sump pumps pump. Chuff, chuff. Such pumps suck up mush plus muck. Dung lumps plus clumps. Turd hunks plus chunks. Grew, grew, grubs plus fungus slugs. Mulch up humus pulp. Ubu unplugs flux. Ubu scrubs up curbs. Thus Ubu must brush up sulfur dust plus lug nut rust. Scuff, scuff. Ubu burns unburnt mundugus. Ubu lugs stuff. Ubu tugs stuff. Ubu puts up fulcrums. Ubu puts up mud huts. But mugwumps shun such glum suburb slums. Tut, tut. Dutch smut churns up blushful succubus lust. Thus buff hunks plus hung studs must fuck lustful sluts. Ruth plus Lulu. Ubu struts. Ubu snuffs up drugs. Ubu hugs Ruth, thus Ruth purrs. Ubu untucks Ruth's moo-moo, thus Ruth must untrust Ubu's tucks. Ubu fluffs Lulu's tutu. Ubu cups Lulu's dugs. Ubu rubs Lulu's buns, thus Lulu must pull Ubu's pud. Ubu sucks Ruth's cunt. Ubu cuffs Ruth's butt. Ubu stuffs Ruth's bum. Such fun. Ubu pumps Lulu's plush sunburnt tush. Ubu humps Lulu's plump ump thrush's rump. Ubu ruts. Ubu huffs. Ubu puffs. Ubu blurts. Push, push. Ubu thrusts. Ubu bucks. Come spurts. Ubu comes. Ubu gulps up brunch, duck, hummus, nuts, fugu, bulgur, buns, crust plus crumbs, blutwurst, brewwurst, spuds, curds, plums, munch, munch. Ubu sups, Ubu slurps rum punch. Ubu jugs, full cups plus mugs, full tubs plus tons, glub, glug. Ubu gluts up grub, thus Ubu's plump heart gut hurts. Ubu grunts, ugh, ugh. Ubu burps up mucus sputum. Ubu upchucks lunch. Ubu slumps. Ubu sulks. Ubu shrugs. Ubu slurs drunk chums. Ubu snubs such drunks, thus Churchill's. Kurt churls cuss, shut up, Ubu, shut up. Gruff punks club, Ubu, but butch thugs drub, Ubu. Ku Klux cults, kung fu punch, Ubu. Rum dum bum, busts up pubs. Okay, I think that's probably enough of letter U for now. I can't even speak anymore after going through these vowels. So I hope that you could hear in that, as I was reading it, the different kind of ideas and personalities that came out with each of those letters. I think that we really have a sort of sensory, almost bodily, almost emotional response to the way words sound. It's not innocent, you know, when you have a word that has a U in it, it's got that that kind of ugh, that, you know, you heard it. It was pretty obvious. And we do have a very visceral response to that. So I think it's important to remember, especially if we're doing something like writing poetry, that words will pull up a almost physical kind of sensual response just based on the way they sound. And that's why you can't use certain words when you're trying to talk about a certain thing, like using a word with a lot of U's in it, you might not want to do when you're trying to express something elegant or, you know, sweet or whatever. You might use an A or an E for that kind of thing. I hope that what I just said made sense. It sounds like a bit of gibberish, but I hope that just having heard it, you can kind of feel what I'm talking about, that there is some feeling in sound. There's a feeling in words and letters and vowels and the way that we speak and the way that we write. And there's actually some power in there that we don't even acknowledge most of the time. We can use our vowels to make people feel things, and that's sort of what poetry does or can do. Basically, Christian Book told us a secret, which we can use for good or for evil, depending on how we want to use our letters. I hope that you enjoyed that reading and the other pieces that I played on the show today. Please do still email me if you have any questions, comments, ideas, love letters. I love getting love letters. You can send them to audiotechcitr@gmail.com, and I will be back to speak with you very soon again.
Listening to the Canadian Way here on CITR FM 101.9. My name is Spike. We'll be with you until 8 o'clock, bringing you the best in new and not so new independent Canadian content from coast to coast. We got a special show for you lined up today, kids. Yes, indeed, it is the Polaris Music Prize long list program. We will be highlighting selections from the 40 bands and CDs that have been picked for the Polaris Prize long list. And of course, in 19 days, they will be picking the top 10 from the 40 list that will be in the running for the $20,000 prize for the Polaris Music Prize. Of course, for those not in the know, the Polaris Music Prize is a Prize that started back in 2006, which honors the best Canadian independent release, regardless of sales, based purely on artistic content. And we're going to try to dig into